The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticise. You are listening to ACH. I'm Andy, your host. Today is Tuesday, so I'm delighted to be joined by my good friend, Dr. Peter Hammond from South Africa. So let's bring him up right now. Peter, are you with us?
Yes, thank you, Andrew. I'm with you.
Thank you so much, Peter. It is 4 minutes past midday in Cape Town, South Africa, where Peter is, and it is 4 minutes past 10 in the morning where I am in London. Before we get into today's show, I want to make a quick announcement. Recently, I've got more and more frustrated with new content coming out to listen to in the so-called independent or alternative media, which has led me to go into my archives and start listening to classic Jeff Rent shows or Tex Mar shows, stuff like that. But one person I've had there, but for some reason I've completely forgotten about, even though he opens every show I do, is Rick Adams, who was a wonderful radio host, and he was on the Republic Broadcasting Network. And only a few days ago, I started going through my folder of Rick Adams shows, and many of them you can still download at republicbroadcastingarchives.org. You just go to that website. There's a show host thing in the corner. You click the drop-down box, you scroll down to Rick Adams, and just work backwards through his last show, which was in 2021, I think March the 20th, 2021. And he passed away 4 years ago, on March the 25th, 2021. And I've got just a little bit of his obituary for you. I'm just going to throw this in. It's only a couple of lines, but I'll include the link to it in the post for our show. Richard J. Rick Adams Janetta, 67, passed away unexpectedly at home on March the 25th, 2021. And it says he was the host of Uncensored Radio Free Rhode Island and broadcasted over Whale 990 AM, as well as many other stations during his 26 plus years working in the industry. He was also known as Mr. Movie and was a real man. His film collection is endless, consisting of over 4,000 titles. He projected his personality well through his love of the film industry, both past and present. And I never knew that of him, and I knew Rick very well. He was on this show many times, and I was on his too. So anyway, he was also a covenant believer, and I firmly believe he is in heaven today. So that being said, I want to hand you over to Peter for the presentation he has for us today, entitled The Real Story of the War Against Whites in the West. Oh, before we do, I want to remind you that Peter and I have a vast archive of all our shows via a link in the posts for all of our shows, including today's, that you can click on and you can navigate up and down and listen to lots of shows that we did up from last week all the way up to when we started. So that being said, today's presentation is the real story of the war against whites in the West. So Peter, where would you like to start us off with today's presentation?
Well, inevitably with a title like that, the people are going to start screaming racist. So I do think it needs to be reminded, I am an African. I was born in Africa. I'm a white African, but I was born in Cape Town, and I've lived in Rhodesia. I was brought up in Rhodesia. And my whole life as a Christian, 47 years, I've dedicated to serving persecuted church throughout Africa. So most of my work in Africa, and I've ministered in 38 countries, traveled in 42 countries, but I've worked as a missionary in 38 countries, including countries like the Congo, Nigeria, Sudan, Mozambique, Angola, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Malawi, Rwanda. So I have spent most of my life serving black people, evangelizing black people, helping black churches that have been under attack, helping to work for the independence of South Sudan to break away from Islamic Sudan so that the black Christians in the South could be a free and independent nation separate from the Muslim Arabs who are forcing them under Sharia law. So I trust that none of our listeners will throw the accusation of being a racist for discussing the war against whites, because I've put most of my time, energy, and work into helping black Christians throughout Africa and serving persecuted Christians throughout Africa. So I've spent vast amount of my time in mud huts, lying on the floor, putting out my sleeping bag inside mud huts under thatched roofs, and living with and working amongst black people throughout Africa. So I trust nobody will be foolish enough as to accuse me of racism for bringing up the obvious fact that there is a war against whites in the West. And my starting point here should be, some people may have noticed that the ANC government ambassador for South Africa in America, Ibrahim Rasool, got expelled from America last week, and they called it that he was branded as a person non grata and expelled from the United States. All his diplomatic privileges were withdrawn. He's given a week to leave the United States. Now, the reasons for this are many, not least of which is the South African government's policies. The South African government has been hostile to the United States of America, despite benefiting from a huge amount of United States generosity, especially USAID, and millions upon millions poured into the country, all kinds of aid. In fact, the very government in South Africa today, the Marxist ANC government, as they were put there by the foreign policy of the United States government. I mean, remember, it was certainly people like Bill Clinton's State Department that worked tirelessly to betray the old National Party government and to force South Africa, economic warfare, sanctions, boycotts, disinvestment, all the rest of it, to bring the ANC to power. So you would have thought the ANC government, the African National Congress government of South Africa, would have a bit more gratitude and appreciation for America's role in bringing their corrupt, wicked, evil, violent, terrorist government to power. But no, they're not. They demonize the very people who help them. They're biting the hands that feed them, literally. But the interesting thing is the ANC government are friends with all the enemies of America, especially Red China, Iran, of course, they're friends with Hamas and Hezbollah and all of that. And the South African government has done a number of things to aggravate the United States, one of which was bringing the State of Israel into the International Court of Justice at The Hague and charging the State of Israel with genocide. And that was sponsored by the South African government. Evidence has come out recently that, in fact, Iran paid a massive bribe to the ANC government to do it, basically helping get the government of South Africa out of a lot of serious debt. They poured millions upon hundreds of millions into South Africa in order to get South Africa to sponsor this and to lead the charge in taking the State of Israel to the criminal court for genocide. So you can imagine that wouldn't have won them any gold stars over in the United States of America, because the American government has always had a very special place for Israel, who they call their number one ally in the Middle East, although it's questionable as to who's the ally of who, because in many cases one wonders who's running which government. The United States government has had a policy of no more overseas useless no-win wars, but they seem to make an exception when it comes to Middle Eastern enemies of the State of Israel, and that they're willing to get themselves into a hot war in the Middle East on Israel's behalf. And this no more foreign aid did not include the billions that goes to the State of Israel, but that's another story. My message right here is the war against whites in the West. And notice that Ibrahim Rasool has personally insulted Donald Trump and the United States as a whole, saying that Donald Trump is a white supremacist leading a white supremacist movement throughout the world. Not that I've noticed, But interesting that that's their perspective. And this Ibrahim Rasool has come back to South Africa very unrepentant, saying he doesn't regret anything he said, even though it's not very diplomatic to insult your host when you're meant to be facilitating good relations with the other country. You would have thought the last thing an ambassador should be is insulting about the country he's called to serve. And it should be remembered that some time ago we had a similar kind of embarrassment where some WikiLeaks released information about insulting comments made by the United States ambassador in Argentina against the Argentinian government. And at that time, the Secretary of State, which was Hillary Clinton at the time, personally apologized to the Argentinian government. The ambassador concerned apologized. The ambassador was recalled. The Secretary of State of the United States made a personal visit to apologize to the President of Australia, of Argentina. And so that's the way you would expect it. On this particular occasion, there's been no sense of repentance or apology from either the ambassador concerned, Ibrahim Rasool, for so insulting his host country, nor from the president of South Africa or the governor of South Africa. In fact, a massive African National Congress political party mob was at Cape Town International Airport to welcome back Ibrahim Rasool when he returned from in disgrace from the United States last week, being told, you know, that he's a champion, he served South Africa with honor, and we're proud of you, and well done, and all these kind of accolades. So what they've done is just entrenched the antagonism with the United States government. I don't think Donald Trump takes well to being insulted. But, you know, white supremacist is such a pejorative term, and it's sort of like Holocaust denier or flat earth or something like that. It's a term that is used as an accusation which you're not allowed to defend yourself against. And because if you try and defend yourself, you become even more guilty. So it's they basically set up this booby-trapped minefield where if you step in and into it, you come onto the minefield they've prepared, you can only lose. It's a no-win situation. I've heard people in Europe say that the average European would prefer to be raped or stabbed than to be called a racist. And it's become one of the worst things in the world is to be called a racist or a Nazi or an anti-Semite or a white supremacist. Now, the idea that Donald Trump is a white supremacist or is leading a white supremacist movement is bizarre, and it's not justified by the facts. And it seems that, in fact, his main crime has been to speak up for the basic values of the United States, in particular to seal the border, especially the southern border, to prevent further illegal immigration, which was more like an invasion, and to begin expelling illegal immigrants, which is not the first time in the history of the United States it's been done. President Eisenhower did a massive amount of deportations as well. This has happened before, and we've seen deportations all over the world, and deportations are not necessarily racism. So, for example, some years ago, Nigeria decided that they've got unemployment in Nigeria. So all foreigners, especially from Ghana, and there were millions of Ghanaians living in Nigeria, they all had to leave. And so the army was mobilized to force the Ghanaians who were entrenched in jobs and so on in Nigeria to leave Nigeria because they said they were taking the jobs of Nigerians and we've got unemployment in Nigeria. This is unacceptable. And suddenly millions of Ghanaians who had for years lived in and worked in Nigeria were expelled. These things have happened around the world. There have been mass people movements, not to mention the many multiplied millions of Germans who were forcibly expelled from countries of their birth throughout the whole of Eastern Europe, not only Russia, but even from Germany, because a lot of Eastern Germany and East Prussia was confiscated, stolen, handed over to Poland to compensate for the huge swath of Poland that Russia stole. And so at the end of the Second World War, there was massive dislocating of populations and indigenous populations were relocated. And you had the largest forced removals, mass people migrations, ethnic cleansing is a more modern term, where Germans were forced out of everywhere from Czechoslovakia, Poland, Yugoslavia, many cases actually just massacred where they were. But millions and millions of Germans lost their homes, lost their traditional lands and were forced to move further westwards if they were left alive at all. So forced removals have happened before and much worse than what's happening now. But it seems that it's okay to invade the whites, it's okay to insult the whites, but it's not okay to defend yourself. The moment you speak up, you're suddenly branded a far-right extremist white supremacist. And that's another war against whites. There's many wars against whites. I think the forcible assimilation, you don't see people pouring into non-Japanese people pouring into Japan to become new Japanese or to destabilize Japanese or to make Japan less Japanese or to make Japan mixed with other nationalities, cultures, and languages. You wouldn't see that in China. In fact, China wouldn't tolerate it. I know that for a fact because somebody I went to school with when we had a reunion of people who had graduated my year from our school, there was one of our chaps who moved his family to Hong Kong, and his children were born in Hong Kong, and when they they've lived in Hong Kong most of their lives. In fact, his children have lived in Hong Kong all their lives. And so when his children tried to get Chinese passports, they were refused. "You're not Chinese," said the Home Affairs people. And so even though they were born in China and they lived in China, because they are of European ancestry, they were rejected for a Chinese passport. And so that seems to be acceptable in the world, that China is for the Chinese, Japan is for the Japanese, and so on. Saudi Arabia is for the Saudi Arabians, and so on. But when it comes to white countries like Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Canada, no, or Great Britain itself, you can be invaded and you can be replaced. And so the mass migration into Sweden and Germany, for example, or Netherlands, is considered normal. Now, there's other ways that you can see whites are being displaced. And being a missionary, must give some missionary statistics here. The First World Missionary Conference, Edinburgh, 1910. In 1910, in Edinburgh, the First World Mission Conference gathered. And at that point, because they did a survey of the world, 32% of the world's population were of European or white descent, 32% of the total world population. Now, I happened to be at the Cape Town 2010 or Lausanne 3, largest missions conference in history, exactly 100 years later, Cape Town 2010. And Cape Town 2010, we launched the latest edition of the Operation World Prayer Book, which is the intercessory handbook to every country in the world. And the statistics I noticed at Cape Town 2010 was white people were now 8% of the world's population. So we've gone from 32%, about a third of the world's population, down to less than 8%. Now, that's pretty catastrophic decline. And I think if you took the definitions of genocide, that fits the definitions, the population to move from in whole or in part, to move from 32% worldwide down to 8%. You know, whites are now statistically a minority in the world's population. We used to be a very sizable, not majority, but a very sizable population of 32% of the world's population. Now we're down to less than 8%. And coincidentally, when I was born in Cape Town, South Africa, 1960, we had whites were 32%, or was it 34%, I think, of the total population in South Africa. Today, whites are less than 8% of the population in South Africa. We have become a minority in our own country. Now, I am one of the minority of Cape Townians who was born in Cape Town. Most people living in Cape Town today were not born in Cape Town. They've moved here. We've got lots of what would be called illegal immigrants or illegal aliens in other parts of the world. But here, they're considered Africans. I mean, a black man can move here from the Congo to Cape Town, and I know quite a few, and he's considered a South African. But I can be born here, and friends of mine could be 8th or 12th generation South Africans, and they're considered expatriates, and they're the minority, and they are considered that they shouldn't even have a right to exist or live. We've got groups in South Africa like the EFF, the Economic Freedom Fighters, which I call the Everything for Free Party. They're a Marxist party, according to their own website, and Julius Malema, the leader, has them wearing red T-shirts and red berets, and he's led 100,000 of their supporters in one stadium. So we had a football stadium crammed with 100,000 of these chaps, not just in the stadiums, in the stands, but on the field, all dancing, toying in the zombie dance, shouting, "Kill, kill, kill the boer, kill the farmer, ba, 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 shoot to kill, kill the farmer, kill the boer. And the boer is their term for whites in general, but Afrikaans farmers in particular. And they are, for Human Rights Day, we just had a public holiday last week called Human Rights Day, 21st of March, Human Rights Day. They were singing to celebrate Human Rights Day, kill the boer, kill the farmer. I've got pictures of people wearing a kill all whites t-shirts, wearing these in universities. Perfectly acceptable, nobody stopping them. And so you've got people talking about the need to kill all whites, to remove all whites from Africa. Now, we were the first Africans in many ways. The first people to identify themselves as Africans were the Afrikaners. And before that, no tribe in Africa identified themselves as of Africa. They were Zulu or Swahili. They were Bemba, Chichewa, Makua. They had their different identifications, Shango and so on. But nobody thought of themselves as an African except the white Boer of Dutch extraction farmers who call themselves Afrikaners. And so interesting that you've got Afrikaners who can trace their ancestry back 12 generations in Africa. Their great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather was here. But they are considered an expatriate and that they don't belong in Africa, whereas a black man who just moved into South Africa or into Cape Town a few years ago is considered an African just because of the color of the skin. Now, I've even had people say there's no such thing as a white African. Well, if that's true, can we use the same logic and say there's no such thing as a black Englishman or a black European or a black American? Because if you can't have a white African, then how can you have black Americans and so on? So if they're wanting to suggest one continent belongs only to one racial group, and historically it's not tenable. At one time, whites were the majority in North Africa. In fact, some of the greatest names in early church history were all white Africans. Think of Augustine, Cyprian, Origen, Tertullian, Ignatius, Athanasius. These were all white Africans, North Africans. And Carthage was white civilization North Africa. They got wiped out. I mean, today, where Carthage used to be, you now have Tunisia. And therefore, you can see an entire civilization of white Christians in North Africa, who once were the majority, who were, by the way, even farming grapes. There were vineyards in North Africa. It's desert now, but there was a time that was an advanced Western Christian civilization of white Africans living in the north of Africa. They got exterminated, genocided by the jihads of the Islamicists who swept across North Africa, wiping out these great Christian cultures. Today, Egypt, Christian white Egyptians, Copts, are less than 10% of the total population of Egypt. And yet they were once the majority. Now they're a minority in their own country. You can think of the Greek Byzantines, the Eastern Roman Empire, based around Constantinople. That was once the greatest city in the world, Constantinople. And the whole of what today is called Turkey was Greek civilization in the Byzantine Empire and the Eastern Roman Empire. And today, there's next no whites left there. They were all exterminated. And the last extermination was in Smyrna, 1922. You had the Greek city of Smyrna was exterminated. Atatürk, leading the Turkish armies, came in and wiped out hundreds of thousands of white Christians, mostly Greek Orthodox Christians, in Smyrna, 1922. And the French Navy, the Italian Navy, the American Navy, and the Royal Navy were all witnesses that they were anchored just offshore. And not only did they not intervene and help save the lives of these civilians being slaughtered, the last Christian city in Asia being exterminated, 1922. But when some of the refugees swam up and tried to climb up the chains of the anchors to get on board to escape from the jihadists who were trying to murder them in the city, the British poured boiling water from kettles over them to make these people fall back into the water. They were beating them back with rifle butts and so on. So that was the last Christian city in Asia, wiped out under the eyes of the powerful navies of France, Italy, America, and Britain, who did absolutely nothing to help the people, and worse than that, scalded some of them and bludgeoned others to get them to stop trying to save their lives and climb on deck. So there has been a war against whites that wiped them out in their heartland of North Africa. There was a time that the heartland of the Christian church was North Africa. North Africa had the greatest minds of the early Christian church, such as Athanasius and Tertullian and Augustine. But today, that is solidly Islamic. Even in Egypt, the superpower, Christians and Copts, Egyptians are a minority now in what was their own country. So this has happened before. But to think that today, Europeans who once dominated the world politically, economically, spiritually, are now less than 8% of the world's total population. So this business of you've got to care for the minorities is just not true. And there are parts in America where white Americans are now the minority. And if they didn't have these mass deportations taking part right now, it wouldn't be too many years or even a generation, and white Americans would be a minority in their own country. I believe in London, Englishmen are now a minority in London, that you've got more non-English people in London than you have Englishmen. And I believe there's many cities in England where they have Muslim mayors. And you not long ago had a Hindu, not just an Indian, but a Hindu, a prime minister. Now you've got a Marxist, atheist prime minister, which is probably worse. I think it's the first time in the history of the United Kingdom that you've got a prime minister who cannot take the oath of office because they don't even believe in God. To have an atheist prime minister, I would have thought, is unconstitutional in Britain. How can the head of the church, the King of England, have an atheist as his prime minister of his government? It just doesn't seem to be even constitutionally tenable. But we've got other ways that you can see how whites have moved from a dominant position in the world and even a dominant position in Europe to where we're becoming a minority in our own countries. And it's not just by wars like the First and Second World War. In some ways, people call it Europe's auto-genocide. But there's also been massive promotion of abortion and sterilization and low fertility rates. One of the ways that the number of whites has been brought down is by the First World War moving women into the factories and even into the fields, whereas before the First World War, the average European woman was having 8 to 10 children. In fact, in South Africa, before the Anglo-Boer War, the average Boer woman was having 12 to 14 children. The wife of President Paul Kruger had 17 children, 17 children who survived infanthood and managed to grow up to being adults. So after the Anglo-Boer War, the number of children per family went down to about 4 per family. And you can see in Europe, you've moved from where before the First World War, the average woman in Europe was having 8 to 12 children. Now it's more like they might have one child or less and adopt a dog and have several abortions and so on. So, or maybe they'll even adopt people of other races who've come into the country who are orphans. But you get amongst the white women in the West, it's more likely that they'll either be sterilized, have an abortion, adopt interracially, or even marry interracially. So miscegenation, interracial marriage, has definitely been one way of bringing down the number of Europeans. And there have been those who've been advocating it. It may interest listeners to know that the Communist Party of the United States has as one of its high goals from early days to encourage interracial marriage and to encourage a miscegenation, to bring down, to dilute the number of whites in the country, to bring down the number of Protestants and Christians, to be able to lower the strength of the families in America. You know, you don't want these irritating Anglo-Saxons. The problem with the Anglo-Saxons is they've got people who make speeches like, give me liberty or give me death. No taxation without representation. Or even worse, like Martin Luther, my conscience is captive to the word of God. Here I stand, I can do no other. They don't want those kind of people. They'd prefer those who will follow the crowd, be sheeple, vote the way they're told to vote, people that you can buy their votes with freebies and so on. And so there are those who are talking about turning Europe into Arabia, turning London into Londonistan, turning America into Ameristan. And it's miscegenation, it's racial integration, it's low fertility rates, it's abortion, it's pornography. There are so many young men who don't get married, but instead what they do is they just cohabit with their digital dolls and their paper dolls, and they are completely addicted to pornography, and they can't have a real relationship with a real flesh and blood woman. Or they go out and they have a relationship with someone of another race, and they thereby not only weaken their own race, they end their family line and so on, but they are going to build up people who will probably be resentful. Just look at Barack Hussein Obama. Barack Hussein Obama is a classic example of what happens with miscegenation. His mother was white, but he despises his mother. He feels more affinity, Barack Hussein Obama, according to his published books, with his absentee father, because his absentee father was a Muslim black. But he has nothing but disdain, and he says he's even ashamed of his white mother. So here, instead of producing better race relations, you can see one of the biggest race baiters in American history was Barack Hussein Obama, a product of interracial marriage. And he had immense resentment and hatred for whites. And I see this a lot. Friends of mine have adopted black kids who've been abandoned or have been without parents, even literally thrown into the gutter or the dustbin and rescued. And there are white families I know who've adopted multiple black children. And for example, one of our good friends who actually worked in our mission for many years, he and his wife realized that they were wrong to have listened to all the propaganda about overpopulation and that they need to get sterilized, because they got themselves sterilized at a certain point after their two lovely daughters were born. They voluntarily sterilized themselves. And then they realized they'd been lied to. So to try and make it right, they went out to try and adopt. So they went to an adoption agency and were told, I'm sorry, for every 1,000 applicants for adoption, we've only got about 2 children available for adoption. And they said, well, there must be something that you can offer us. And then the adoption person said, well, if you're willing to adopt across the racial lines, we've got, for every 1,000 babies that are available for adoption, needing adoption, there's less than 2 black families willing to adopt them. And so if you're willing to adopt across the color line, we can offer you hundreds of children. And so this family started adopting, and it's like they got addicted. They adopted, they didn't stop at 2. They went on to 4, then went on to 5. So they adopted 5 children who then they are bringing up in their home. And, of course, there's concerns from their friends and family. Well, what about their lovely daughters? I mean, one day when these kids grow up older, they might end up assaulting their so-called stepsisters or whatever. And it's not like that hasn't happened. And so you see a lot of ways of how the number of whites worldwide has been brought down. And it's not just wars. It's not just propaganda about overpopulation. It's also sterilizations, adoptions. Just think how the LGBTQ works. If you can get some young men willing to get sterilized or have castrations, and girls to have mastectomies and genital mutilation. And this is another way that whole LGBTQ movement is also part of, it fits into the whole a white genocide, racial replacement. It fits in perfectly with those who are trying to get rid of the whites. You might recall that one of the daughters of Barack Hussein Obama said, I'm looking forward to the day when there's no more white people left on earth. And there are those who talk about that. The people, the professors in universities speaking about how white genocide is such a good idea that it's hard to imagine that anyone would be against it except for hardcore white supremacist extremists. And they've got that word white supremacist again, that South African ambassador for the ANC, Ibrahim Rasool, said. Apparently the Americans today are all a bunch of white supremacists. Not that you would notice it when you get there. In fact, if you said that to almost any MAGA supporter, any American or Donald Trump himself, they would deny vehemently that they're white supremacists. And they would continually push for how they believe in the equality of all. And when they start to attack universities, like at one stage, Bob Jones University in the United States wouldn't allow black students on campus unless they were married, because they had a strong anti dating across the racial line and anti-marriage across the racial line, that you stayed within your racial lines. And they got pushed, bullied, attacked, and slandered until Bob Jones University had to change their policy to allow black students, even those who are single, and interracial relationships on the university campus. And so if you dare to speak out against this, saying, you know, I'd prefer my daughter to marry within our race or within our tribe or cultural nationality, you'd be called a white supremacist. You'd be accused of being a far-right extremist, being a racist and all the rest of it, an extremist. So this is part of the war on whites. We can see there is a definite goal, and there are people openly stated, including the Marxists. And you can see this, the Communist Party of South Africa, the Communist Party of the United States, have promoting interracial marriages, interracial relationships, interracial dating, and exacerbating tensions between races is high on the agenda list of the Communist Party USA and the Communist Party of South Africa. I would be surprised if the Communist Party of the UK didn't have a similar goal, that encouraging racial dilution of the country and interracial conflict is a good way for them to advance the communist cause. So there is a war against whites worldwide, and there does seem to be a war against whites in the West in particular. There was a time when Australia had a whites-only immigration policy, that people could come to Australia if they were of European descent, and they had to be generally of the Christian background. So they had a requirement for that. Whereas now it would seem if you're Asian, you're more welcome into Australia than if you're European. And we can see there's been a lot of changes in immigration policies. Before President Eisenhower, before 1954, the United States of America had a policy of whites-only immigration as well. They initially, the United States began as a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant country, a WASP country. And it was somewhere in the 1800s that they started to allow immigrants from Catholic areas like Ireland as well. And then you even had people being allowed from Orthodox Europe. That was more in the early part of the 20th century. But since 1954, you can be Asian, you can be African, you can be Arab, you can be Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, communist, atheist, all sorts of things. And so the cohesion of the United States has fallen apart, as it has in Australia, as it has in Canada, and of course in South Africa too. We can see there's a definite preference to get rid of whites, so that in Canada, for example, there are people who go to the doctor because they're depressed, and then they're being told by the doctor, have you considered voluntary euthanasia? And that instead of helping the patient who's suffering from depression, they encourage the patient to consider suicide. State-assisted suicide in Canada. Now, do you think they've reached that stage? And it's because they're trying to give lots and lots of free things to immigrants coming into the country from non-European backgrounds. They're trying to get rid of the older European citizens. Can you just die off quicker? Would you mind just taking a voluntary euthanasia program now? You can remove one more burden on the state's medical health, what they call it, national health initiative and so on, national health insurance. NHI, and to think we've reached a stage that not only are they encouraging sterilization, LGBTQ and so on, and abortions for their citizens, but encouraging voluntary suicide or euthanasia for their own people so that they can then bring in population replacement. And I've got posters where you can actually see people with signs saying, this Jew will replace you, and your grandchildren will be brown, LOL. I've got those pictures of people literally in your face shouting out and demonstrating. This was also very visible in 2020 during the Black Lives Matter or BLM marches. Interesting, some black friends of ours who put out posters, all black lives matter and black babies' lives matter, were considered racist. And of course, if you put all lives matter, that was considered racist. So Black Lives Matter was, of course, a complete fraud. And now we know that USAID was funding not only Antifa, but also Black Lives Matter. And we know that Black Lives Matter was being not only funded by US taxpayers through USAID, but it's been proven since that several of the Black Lives Matter leaders and founders were involved in human slavery and human trafficking, including of pedophiles and trafficking women, prostitutions. They were operating modern slave rings. Many of them were involved in pretty horrific atrocities, not just drug trafficking, but human trafficking. I mean, can you imagine? And here's BLM screaming and shouting about whites being guilty of slavery in the past, which ended two centuries ago, but being involved in slavery today. And many of them involved in hideous human trafficking operations. So what a fraud. And the whole BLM operation, we now know, was being funded by USAID. And part of its goal was to promote the LGBTQ agenda, using race as more of a veneer. But they had a radical sexual revolutionary goal. And they're promoting things such as transgender surgeries, which effectively gently mutilate, and mastectomies and castrations, and making sure that these kids will not be able to be fertile or have children again. We've found many different fraudulent USAID operations, including where they had vaccinations that were being done to inject sterilization agents into the people or harvest their biometric data for various reasons. So there is a war. There's a war against whites. There's a war against whites worldwide. And particularly we see it in the West, where the populations are being replaced. And countries like Sweden, Germany, Britain might cease to exist, France, if this immigration invasion continues and if the assimilation continues. And we've seen even the German government putting out propaganda of encouraging white girls and German girls to have relationships, sexual relationships, very explicit sexual relationships with Arabs and blacks coming in as new immigrants. And Sweden and Germany have particularly been bombarding the kids in the schools with all kind of miscreation propaganda, encouraging interracial marriage or interracial sex at least, and massive amounts of propaganda. And if anyone notices this or thinks it's not a good idea, they are suddenly called white supremacist, extremist, far right, Nazis and all the rest of it. So they've got a war of words. They've got a war against food, faith, freedom, farmers, fuel, and there's a war against whites. And there's so many examples of how we can see it. One of them being in South Africa, if you go just north of Pretoria, there is a, on the National One Road, there is a memorial on the side of the road, one kopje or side of a hill. There are thousands of crosses, simple white crosses, and there's a big sign there, it's called Plaas Moorden, or Farm Murders. And each cross has got a name and a date on it of the name of some white farmer murdered, actually normally tortured to death. And so this is a memorial and a protest of South Africans reminding people who drive past that more than 4,000 white farmers and their family members have been murdered, tortured to death. And if you want to read the details in books like Kill the Boer, which Ernst Ritz wrote, it makes for horrific reading. You know, just in 1 year, and you'll read the names of the people and the dates, burned alive, hacked to death, bludgeoned to death, hung, tortured to death, shot to death, and so on, stabbed to death. And, you know, sometimes 69 stab wounds on a single person, and you go through these. This is not just murder. This is terrorism. This is torture. And so for somebody to say, like the president of South Africa, last time that Donald Trump was in office in the White House, back in, was it 2017, 2018, he made a message about how, sent out a Twitter comment about the amount of white farmers being murdered in South Africa. And the president of South Africa, Cyril Ramaphosa at the time, he made a statement saying, not one white farmer has been murdered. Not one. But we've got books written detailing names, dates, places of thousands of white farmers murdered, tortured to death. And by the way, sometimes when the assailants have been killed, captured, we have found they had to be released because it was a National Intelligence Service, our equivalent of the CIA, person amongst the attackers got to be released. South African National Defense Force officer got to be released. South African Police Service officer and so on. And so we found government complicity. The book Kill the Boer subtitle is government involvement or government complicity in the murder of farmers. And it's proven. We have members of parliament singing songs like Kill the Boer, Kill the Farmer. I don't know what more needs to be done than to watch a video of 100,000 black men dressed in red with red berets and red T-shirts of the Marxist EFF party chanting, kill, kill, kill the Boer, kill the farmer, shoot to kill. And then people say, no, there's no such thing as white genocide. There's no such thing as replacement or population replacement. And mass immigration is not a goal to produce white genocide. And yet you've got professors of universities saying, we need to have white genocide. We need to exterminate all whites. We need to replace all the whites. And people who are promoting the invasion of America, Europe, Britain, with these illegal immigrants pouring in and saying, no, 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 there's no plan to replace the white population of Britain or America or France or Germany or Sweden. And yet they're doing it. And they're even talking about the need for it. And there are people talking about Londinistan, Amiristan, Eurabia. So white people objectively have gone down in population from a time when we were the dominant population on the planet to where we are now, a persecuted minority where you're not even allowed to speak up for yourself. If you speak up for yourself or if you notice any of these atrocities, you're called a white supremacist. And yet there are black supremacists out there saying that whites aren't human beings. Whites are not even Homo sapiens. We're not even human beings. And that no white deserves to live and all whites should have their throats cut. We've got a member of parliament, leader of a political party in South Africa, Julius Malema, says we must cut the throat of whiteness publicly. They make these statements. And do you think that you've got people like even a president's daughter in America saying, I look forward to when there's going to be no more white people around. It is time for us to recognize there is a war against whites. And one of the most important things that we can do is know our history, be proud of our history. I think Elon Musk is quite right when he reminds the Germans, it's okay to be proud to be German. It's okay to be proud of your nation, of your culture, of your history, of your heritage. And there's so many people who are afraid to even celebrate their own national heroes or to have streets named after some hero of their country or to have books that celebrate their own history. And we've got to be willing to know our history, to stand up for history, to protect our heritage, to protect our museums. We've got so many attacks on our monuments, our museums, the renaming of streets and suburbs and airports and monuments being destroyed in South Africa. Museums having the exhibits taken out and replaced with new Marxist-type exhibits. I like secondhand books because that's pre-political correctness. So I often go to secondhand bookshops, and there's a lovely secondhand bookshop up in Hermanus called Hemingway's. So I've gone to Hemingway's and said, you know, you've got magnificent books here. Where did you get them? And the owner said, you'd weep, and told me, they got a phone call saying, get the biggest vehicle you've got, come down to Cape Town City Library, and at the back they're throwing out their books into dumpsters. And these massive dumpsters, you know, these big yellow dumpster truck recipients where they put building rubble and so on into, there were piles and piles of books, beautiful first editions, irreplaceable editions in many cases, sometimes leather covered, thrown in there. And so along went Hemingway's owner with a bucky, a pickup truck, and started to load in books that were being thrown in a dumpster. Why were they throwing the books in the dumpster? To make space for all the Marxist propaganda, the Karl Marx, Friedrich Engels, Fidel Castro, Che Guevara, other garbage that now is to come in. Because, you know, old gods must be replaced and new gods must be installed, said Karl Marx. I went to the Voortrekker Monuments in Pretoria, and they've got an Erfenis Museum. Now, that's Heritage Museum in Afrikaans. And I went into their beautiful library, magnificent library. And it was in an air-conditioned, sealed, protected area with halon gas warning signs on the sides where there would be an alarm and the lights would flash. If there was a fire, if the smoke detector sounded an alarm, you'd have to get out the hall quickly because the gas would fill to kill any fire. Now, of course, the gas kills a fire, but also gets rid of all oxygen, which we need to live and to breathe. But, of course, a fire is a breathing, living thing, so fires need oxygen to survive. And so many libraries have halon gas to protect the books from burning. And so this is how seriously they were protecting these books. Where do you get these books from? And the lady in charge said, well, we heard that they were throwing out all the good old books from Pretoria Library. That's the capital city of the country. They went down and, again, dumpster trucks being filled with books. And they just rescued as many books as they could. They didn't have enough vehicles or enough space. But they rescued thousands of books that were being thrown out. I've got another example. A friend of mine from America sent me in a parcel a book. And it was Livingstone's Travels, a first edition of David Livingstone's Missionary Travels in Southern Africa book. And inside this book, it said, University of Tennessee Library. And then there's a big smudged stamp over that saying discarded. Top right-hand corner of the first page, $2. So somebody decided to throw out this first edition of David Livingstone's Missionary Travels, one of the most important books ever produced. This still had the charts, the fold-out maps, the original diagrams, the sketches of David Livingstone, absolutely irreplaceable and valuable. And I checked online on Amazon, a first edition of Livingstone's Travels cost $2,000. The University of Tennessee not only threw it out, it sold it at a library sale for $2. I mean, how's that for throwing away something of such value? And this other friend sent it to me free. So we've got such a valuable book. We've actually got quite a lot of valuable books like that, many of them thrown out by libraries. And if you're lucky, you pick them up in library sales, because many libraries will sell their good books. They don't normally throw valuable things into a dumpster truck. Only Marxists are that stupid. But we see all over the world a war. Here's a war against words, a war against pre-political correct publications. And so we should keep alert. Libraries, of course, are part of the collective memory and heritage of a nation. There are many ways to wage war on a people. And Karl Marx said the first battlefield is the rewriting of history. And of course, you could see how libraries are an important cultural conservation center, which is why Marxists like to throw out the old Christian biblical worldview books, which have got the great heritage of the West. That's part of what they aim at, is to wage war against our books, against our libraries. But I think you can see there are many ways that wars are being waged against whites. And we've got a historically low fertility rate. We've never had such low fertility rates. Never have whites taken so long to get married. And never have there been so many women who have never had a child by age 40, for example. We've got self-sterilization, we've got the LGBTQ movement, we've got pornography, we've got interracial marriage. So many things are working together to wage war on the whites. So whites may soon be a minority in their own countries. I know that because white Rhodesians, we were a dominant, powerful country at one time. Today there's not 10,000 whites left in Zimbabwe. There were 300,000 whites in Zimbabwe, in Rhodesia, in 1980. Today, not 10,000 left. I think it might be down to 6,000 by now. And South Africa, the number of whites in our country has decreased dramatically. 3 million whites have fled from South Africa. We are now a minority in our own country. It happened to Egypt. It happened to Byzantine Empire. It happened to Constantinople. It's happened in Rhodesia. It's happened in South Africa. It can happen in Germany, Sweden, Denmark. Can happen in Britain, France, and the United States as well. It's happening in Canada. It could easily happen in Australia. And to think the Canadians are trying to help the process along by even euthanizing and encouraging voluntary suicides of their older population while they welcome in people, including jihadists and enemies of Canada, into the country who express nothing but contempt for their host country's history, culture, and religion. And so, if anyone wants to accuse you of being a white supremacist for noticing this, just remind them that by all objective standards, this is genocide. This is an attempt. It's a war against our heritage. It's a war against our culture. It's a war against our monuments. It's a war against every aspect of our country. But objectively, you can see that the number of our population is going down, down, down. Just like the number of Christians in Iraq were 1.6 million when America liberated it from Saddam Hussein, today there's not even 100,000 Christians left in Iraq. People who stood firm for the gospel for over a millennium, for 1,400 years in Iraq, families that had been there for generations, have either fled or been murdered in recent years, so that the Middle East itself has lost 5 million Christians since the Arab Spring, which was funded by USAID. We had, this is, demographics is destiny. Demographics is, in fact, your future. Your ethnic heritage is being waged war on, and there's a deliberate attempt to create a totally new multicultural Babel, a situation which is trying to reverse God's judgment at Babel, where God wanted the peoples and the different language groups and nation groups to move out and to fill the earth. They're trying to bring everything into a new Babel today, which is exactly what the EU is symbolized by. Even if you go to Strasbourg, there is this building symbolizing the old Tower of Babel, built even incomplete with the scaffolding on the outside. And the posters inside are saying, Europe, many tongues, one voice. And the EU is consciously, deliberately shaking a fist of rebellion in God's face. Just think how they've even got a statue at in Brussels, a woman riding a beast. There's so much imagery in the EU that shows that it is anti-Christ, that it is against Western civilization, that is trying to destroy Europe from within. And no wonder countries like Hungary and Romania are trying to rebel against us and say, no, we've come out of communism, we don't want to go back to it. And the EU today is doing what the old Warsaw Pact used to do. And we can see an anti-Western agenda. And in America, we're seeing an attempt to fight back, but I don't think they fully understand what they're dealing with. And they're not willing to recognize the ethnic realities, but they are at least recognizing that illegal immigration invasion is not good and you need to deport illegal aliens. You can see some good things taking place, but it needs to go further than that. One needs to recognize that there's a war in the history, and that needs to be resisted. We cannot continue to have people try and destroy our heritage and destroy our demographics. Back to you, Andrew.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Peter.
I'm just going to mute you for a moment whilst our microphones sync. And I had an idea just upon what you said, Peter. I'm sure you're going to be happy with it. In fact, I think that you sent it to me before. And that is today's show image. I am planning, with, if you agree, to put up the image of the EU Parliament building and the Tower of Babel. Are you familiar with that image of the three images next to each other?
Yes, indeed. No, that's a picture that is worth a thousand words. It really shows what you're talking about, because it's their choice of design.
Yeah, and it says, I've got it here, rebuilding the Tower of Babel at the top, the first picture. It's a European Union poster, many tongues, one voice. And then you've got the Tower of Babel painting by Pieter Bruegel. And then you've got the actual European Union Parliament building in Strasbourg, the Louise Weiss building. And you can see the similarity of that building between the other two. So that really is a striking image, as Peter said. So that being said, a very interesting presentation as always. I encourage people to please support Peter's work. There is a GiveSendGo link in the post for the show. And Peter, before we go, do you have anything else that you'd like to say? And also, could you give the audience your email and where they can find your work?
Yes, well, we are trying to resist, and we still have an enclave of Western Christian civilization in Africa, and that's the Cape of Good Hope. And so I'm the chairman of the Cape Independence Forum, and we are trying our best to mobilize support for an independent Cape of Good Hope, that we can have an enclave where life and property is respected, where we will be a sanctuary, where people can flee from the genocidal Marxist government of South Africa to escape expropriation without compensation and farm murders and other evils that are taking place in the country. So please pray for the Cape of Good Hope, and let's see what we can do to support Cape independence. I've written a book, A Case for Secession, and some people think it's unworkable, but I've seen successful secessions like in South Sudan, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, and Croatia, Slovakia, I've been able to be privileged to be part of some of those campaigns for secession. And let's remember, some of the greatest countries in history grew out of secession. Austria used to control Switzerland. Switzerland seceded from Austria. The United States seceded from Britain. And Texas seceded from Mexico. The Netherlands seceded from Spain. There's many examples in history where secessions have worked. And we are trying to preserve Western Christian civilization and respect for law and property in the Cape. Again, you'll see on our Frontline Mission SA.org website links to these projects and what people can do to help support this noble cause. We mustn't keep just being on the defensive. We need to counterattack and reassert and save our civilization from being swamped and overrun.
Thank you, Peter. Okay, so that being said, I want to thank Peter again for joining us today on a show entitled The Real Story of the War Against Whites in the West. Peter and I'll be back with you at the same time next Tuesday. And until then, folks, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day, and bye for now.